Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the John Clayton Show. And you know what would be great is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, you know, I know in ESPN circles and in NFL circles, a day like today is considered to be a holiday. And why would it be a holiday? Well, the NFL schedule comes out tonight. It's going to be announced on the NFL Network at 5 o'clock. And so every team, all 32 teams, are able to get their schedule. And I know from all the stories done through the years that I've had to write about the schedule, it's like, really do. I mean, it's like a national holiday because, you know, you think about the fact that now you start to book some trips and make your plans as far as where you're going to go during the season. It really can be a lot of fun and, of course, something that everybody looks forward to. So we've got that in line, along with the five biggest stories of the day, and the top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
You know, I was with Michael Bennett all fall last year, so he never ran, unfortunately, but, like, he was telling me he read books during team meetings last year. Like, that was, like, he said it just kind of normally, because he'd heard Carroll say the same thing over and over for 7 years.
You know, there's a good side and a bad side to having great players who are intelligent, sharp, all these different things, and fit the mold of what this core group had. But I guess there's also a little bit of a bad side about it, because as motivating as Pete Carroll wants to be and is, I guess, you know, you hear this for 6, 7, 8 years, and all of a sudden it becomes a little bit boring, a little bit predictable, and all those different things. And that's Greg Bishop of SI talking about, you know, some of the things that he picked up from Michael Bennett last year. And I'm still stunned to think that you can have, you know, meetings going on and you have all these different things. And listen, I'm victim of this myself, because I always loved to multitask. I remember going through college, I was kind of this same way. You know, you're listening to all the things going on in class. I'm working on math things to do on other school things and all that stuff, you know, trying to get 2-3 things done at once. But, you know, that tends to be a little bit of a bad thing, and I think it also tells why this team is making the moves that it's making, because you know, when the voice starts to go a little bit different for some of the veterans that have been around, well, it's time to get new guys in, new veterans, new young guys, and see if the message can be going to all those. Because, you know, if you don't necessarily totally believe in everything, and I think that, you know, when you start to hear the Michael Bennett doing this stuff, that maybe that could do it. This, I think, also plays into what might happen with Earl Thomas. Now, again, I don't know where Earl Thomas, I would imagine that you're not going to see him reading a book during any of these, but I think that this enhances the chance even more so now that Earl Thomas might be traded. Because, again, you know, this group on defense played together so well. It was the heart and soul of this team. It was one of the reasons, not only going to 2 Super Bowls, but winning 1 Super Bowl. This defense had so much. But again, when the message starts to get a little bit stale and the guys may not be responding to the message, then maybe it's time to make the moves. And you can see right now, the Seahawks have made the moves.
Number two.
Probably the best stuff, Mike Leake's pure stuff he's had all year. And I thought he was just really on top of his game. You know, outside of the run, I think he gave up in the second inning. He was right on top of it, getting the ball down. Really good command of the breaking ball tonight. I thought the ball, throwing the ball outstanding. You know, he was in really good shape.
And that's Scott Servais talking about Mike Leake, who really went well for 6 innings, and then everything fell apart in inning number 7. 4 runs without getting an out, 11 runners coming to the base. Nick Vincent came in. He gave 2 more runs. And so all of a sudden, what was a very close 1-1 game now is 7-1. And so the Astros have won 2 out of 3. And right after this show, in fact, a little bit earlier, before the end of the show, we'll go to the pregame at 11:45. Now you can see that it's a matter that the Mariners need to win just to get the series even and not fall too far behind. Record is 9-7. Mike Leake will be joining us here in the next hour. And one of the things I'm looking forward to talking to him about is just how things are so different right now for pitchers, because, you know, he's won now, not a few, but a small group of pitchers that really can go into the sixth and seventh inning on a consistent basis. But the challenge of getting that third time around the order, we'll talk to him about that. Ben Gamble made his season debut with after missing 15 games. And, of course, we continue taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. So Ben Gamble 0-for-2, but at least he drew a walk, so he was able to go on base. So today, Marco Gonzalez, and this is a key start for him because he's coming off a couple bad outings. He's got an 8.25 earned run average, and they need him to be able to get into the fifth and sixth innings just to try to get things going on him because he's a great prospect. He did well in the preseason, but he needs to do well. He takes on Charlie Morton. Game time is going to be at 12:40. And, of course, you can, and we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number 3.
I think Mike's one of the very best catchers in baseball. He's the combination of his defensive skills, his power, you know, what is an evolving level of patience, and his maturity both in the clubhouse and as a leader on the field has been really remarkable. I honestly can't wait till he gets back. We were expecting him to rejoin the team in time for the series with the Rangers, and you know, it can't happen soon enough because he's such a big part of the team.
And Mike Zunino, coming off his oblique injury, was in a rehab appearance in single-A Modesto. So far in three games, he's 1-for-11. But here's the roster moves as they continue to go. Now, Ariel Miranda is expected to go down, and that means that they'll be able to go ahead. That was the move for Gamble, so that move has already happened. At the moment, the Mariners are keeping five outfielders, so Ichiro remains safe temporarily and probably for another week or two. We'll see how that goes. You know, Zunino's going to be an easy swap because, again, you know, you have two catchers, and so now one goes down. That'll be really easy. Now the next one's going to be Ryan Healy on that sprained ankle. He's finishing up some running programs, expected to go on rehab assignment going on the weekend. So Zunino coming back against Texas on the road this weekend. That's encouraging. Erasmo Ramirez is now expected to start on Sunday, and so they'll have to make a roster move, you know, on Sunday to see where that's going to go. And so interesting moves, but predictable type of moves. But at some point, the Mariners may be saying goodbye to Ichiro.
Number 4.
The full 2018 NFL schedule will be released at 5 p.m. today. The dates and times for the international games have already been announced. The Seahawks will take on the Raiders in London at 10 a.m. on October 14th. And the NFL has also made the decision to start some of the primetime evening games slightly earlier.
So, Maura, are you excited? Maura Dooley, are you excited now the schedule's coming out? I mean, you get, because I get jacked up about it. I really like when the schedule comes out.
Yeah, but I think I'm the opposite of Groz. I get excited about any little thing NFL related, especially in the off season.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know if everyone's with us, but yeah, I'm really excited actually.
Yeah, and a couple little items to note. From what we're hearing, the Seahawks will get a home game against the Rams early, which I don't know which week it's going to be. Where normally they would go visit the Rams. That's a little bit of a change. As always, all 32 teams will be playing division games in Week 17. That's something that's been on the mark now for literally about 6, 7, 8 years. So that's going to continue. Looks like the games are going to be moved up, some of the night games. So the Monday night games are now going to start at 8:15, and Sunday night games, they're going from 8:30 to 8:20. So they're trying to make the moves to get these games not so late, trying to get them a little bit better for the primetime people on the East Coast, so they're not going to sleep too early. So some adjustments in that. But of course, you know, always interesting to see what's going to happen with the schedule that comes out at 5 o'clock today. And believe me, it's a national holiday.
Number 5.
I just felt like I was in a really good rhythm, so I'm just trying to see how long I can stay in that zone and just trying to make a mark on the game early on, especially after the way we started the game one.
So, I mean, as expected, LeBron James just went crazy last night in Game 2 against the Pacers after the Pacers blew out the Cavs in Game 1. LeBron scored 16 points in the first 6 minutes and was just absolutely dominating. But here's the concern on this one. LeBron plays one of the best games you could ever go, scoring 46 in the playoffs. And the Cavs at home only won by 3, 100-97. Sure, they're going to win the series against the Pacers. I don't know if they're going to go into the next round and be able to advance. Nevertheless, what they're saying is that, you know, they need more help for LeBron. The other guys have to step up. Nevertheless, this was a big win for LeBron. There's now 1-1 in the series, and everything moves to Indianapolis. And of course, you can listen to my show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up, we go under further review. review. We'll look to see more about what's the thoughts on with Michael Bennett reading books. I mean, what did he read? What's going to be on the agenda instead of listening to Pete Carroll? It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Any day at this time, we always go under further review. And naturally, the bombshell dropped by Greg Bishop, which got so much reaction around the station all day. And, of course, what that was that, you know, he spent a lot of time working with stories on with Michael Bennett. And one of the things that he picked up, and, of course, Greg works at SI, lives here, and is one of the great writers in this country, and has such trust with the players that he gets access to an amazing thing. And, of course, the amazing story that he was able to tell Brock and Salk yesterday was that, you know, here after all these years, you know, since being here from 2013 through this past season, you know, Michael Bennett had heard so many of the Pete Carroll stories and motivating speeches and all those things that, you know, instead of just predicting what he was going to say, he was reading a book, trying to read the, I don't know what he was reading. You figure it's got to be something that's political, something that's very interesting. Well, at some point, I'm sure we'll talk with Michael and find out what he might have been reading. But again, that kind of shows you that, you know, sometimes, you know, you can try to go and motivate and all these different things. And, you know, this is probably why we're seeing more change on this team than expected. And so Brock and Salk talked about this earlier today, about how strange this was with Mike, the story that they heard from Greg Bishop and Michael Bennett, and probably not a positive thing.
100%. Okay, you're 100. Actually, for you, you're a little over 100%.
Maybe
on this deal.
My mic's running a little hot.
Yeah. Is it 90% then on Bennett to you? Like, is 90% of you?
I'm not
just
saying that.
I
actually think Pete Carroll and John Schneider have to share in the blame here
equally.
I don't know, but yeah, maybe. Because I think coaches and general managers, it's on them to select the right players and to coach them the right way. And if Pete failed to reach Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman, then that's on him. And if John Schneider brought those guys back longer than he needed to, then that's on him. So I can absolutely put the blame on those guys. They're also acting and taking action this offseason in order to remedy that fact. Yep. But okay, yeah, I can put the blame for what happened on them, but that doesn't make me in any way less disappointed in Michael Bennett.
And, of course, the disappointment that Mike Salk's talking about is the fact that, you know, Bennett kind of tuning out the coach as he's trying to motivate the team. And, again, you know, so it's, I think, and again, this is what happens. And this is why, you know, you can see not that it's a culture change, because the culture had been so good for so long. And the team, I mean, you could see was starting to slip last year. I mean, injuries clearly played a big factor. The lack of a running game and the poor offensive line blocking, that played a big factor, too. You know, not having enough offense. But I think you can see that things had been slipping on defense, even though you're still having, you know, great effort and great talent. I mean, this was a defense that had 8 guys who had been to the Pro Bowl. 8. Nobody else had that many in the league. And again, you look and you see, you know, giving up 20-plus points a game, you know, that kind of caught back. And of course, after you get to the final 7 games, when you don't have Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman, you know, things, you're still statistically were doing well, but you can see something was amiss. And maybe this is part of it. And all I know is that the one guy who never misses on the chance to chime in on something like this, particularly as a much great student he was of the game, as a great guy that loves this sport. I mean, I know that Dave Wyman was not really happy with when he heard this story.
And one of the ways you do it, John, is by getting a guy like Michael Bennett to buy in. And, you know, when he buys in and you see him, you know, listening to Pete's message and you know, and all that, And really, you know, that makes me mad, because, you know, you listen to Pete and how supportive he was of Michael Bennett with that Las Vegas thing. You know, Chuck Knox would have said, "What are you doing in Vegas? Why are you out after 12 o'clock in Vegas?" And Pete, you know, was kind of defending Bennett, and that's how he repays him. And that's bad form.
And that's, I think, why you're seeing the changes that you're seeing. Because, again, you know, and this is going to be, you know, very, very interesting to see once everything starts to open up in the OTAs and the mini camps and all that, you know. Pete now talking on the press conference, the guys now talking about looking back and all the changes that, you know, obviously it's a disrespect when you're not listening to your coach. I mean, you're reading a book and you're not paying attention. And also for the younger players, probably doesn't give a good sign as far as what you need, because you need to pay attention, particularly as successful as Pete has been in trying to at least motivate this team and get it to play. And of course, I mean, you look back and even go back to some of the injury reports, you know, how many guys are missing more practice. And again, that happens as the guys get older. But I mean, now you can see there's more issues that have surfaced. And again, I mean, let's not overreact to this, because overreacting saying, oh, this team's a mess. No, this team still was a team that was in the playoff hunt, you know, had three games at home that were all winnable. And again, you know, they played more like the 9-win team than they did the 12-win team, but they were still in position to win enough games to get to 12. Did not happen. Something was amiss. And now it's a matter of trying to regroup, reload, and as I know John Snyder says, reset. And that, I think, is the plan. But overall, I mean, I think that everybody has to buy in. And again, I know this happens with success. And Maura, you know, when you talk about you keep winning and winning and winning, you have the continued expectations that it's going to continue. But then when things start to slip, now maybe you're not buying in as well, you know, maybe not to the coach, maybe not to the players. And when you start to think, oh, I don't think this is a Super Bowl team, it starts to show itself on the field.
Yeah, and I agree with Salk that you have to give him some credit for trying to get a handle on this now, but it's hard for me to understand why a coach, if someone's showing that level of disrespect in a team meeting, doesn't say, hey, you know what, you're sitting on the bench this week, and try to get back some control during the season.
Yeah, that's true. But again, it's like, you're Pete and you're all motivated and you know how energized he gets. I mean, you know, maybe he didn't look over and see that Michael Bennett was reading a book. Maybe the way that Michael reads the book, because you know how the auditorium is. I mean, it's pretty expansive. It's pretty big. And so you're not going to be able to see all those different things. And I'm sure Michael probably doesn't sit in the front row or anything like that. Probably sits over on the side. So maybe he didn't see it. But that's got to be, you know, something that now explains why is Michael Bennett no longer here. Again, you know, they were able to get some trade value, not the trade value you would hope, because he's such a good player. But overall, it's like, all right, it's time to move on. And that just happens. And that's, I mean, I watched it with the Steelers. You watched it with the 49ers. I mean, you've watched it over the years with the New England Patriots. Maybe this explains. So, because again, you know, Tom Brady, even though right now he's not totally buying into everything going on in New England, but why maybe a guy like Bill Belichick gets rid of key guys on defense, particularly defense, a little earlier. Because maybe he senses that all his speeches, which wear everybody down, you know, gets to the point where it's time to move on. You take a Richard Seymour. He's had great success, almost a Hall of Fame type of player, and you trade him. You take a Jamie Collins, and you trade him. You take a Chandler Jones, and you trade him, you know, because, you know, you realize it's like, okay, how long are they going to buy in? And if you have questions, you move on.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that too, that it might explain. I mean, obviously he's done pretty well with seeming to know when to get rid of players right before their play drops off as well, but that could have something to do with it. You know, you, especially if guys are a little bit outspoken, maybe you move on from them before it gets to a point that it ends up like this. I just hope that maybe for this next time around with Pete and John, they maybe move on from guys a little sooner and don't try to re-sign everyone. I know it's hard. You had a historically good defense, so I'm sure it was hard to make those decisions, but it just seems like it got a little out of hand.
Yeah, by the way, on a different front, did you hear some of the, I heard this yesterday on a competing station that was over getting ready for the ball game. You notice that they don't have, at the moment, I don't know, maybe they put one up today, Earl Thomas on the side of CenturyLink.
Ooh, I did not notice that.
I think there's right now one spot for one poster. And I know that they were doing Google searches and everything else, looking at everything. And, there was kind of a missing Earl Thomas. I mean, I think Shaq Griffin's is up there. I mean, clearly there's, you know, some of the new players on the team. I know Jaron Reed is up there. I don't know if they have Earl Thomas at the moment, even though he's still currently a member of the Seahawks.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. You can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up, Mike Leek, who really has done such a great job of coming over in the trade, is going to join us. We'll hopefully get him right at the beginning of this next segment. Mike Leek coming up next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
So the Mariners last night, and this has been a very good series. And again, I think it just shows you now, you know, the things that you have to learn about your team as you are going through, particularly at this level. And I think that you can see that, you know, this team can compete. I think it can compete better this year than it does than the Astros last year. But also you can see where the Astros have such a great advantage. I mean, they've assembled one of the best pitching staffs maybe that's been there in years. I mean, when Gerrit Cole's like, what, your number four starter? I mean, that's ridiculous how good they are. And now, like, to Charlie Morton, he's undefeated. He goes out today, and they just have so many good pitchers that can go in a rare sense, because that's why we're looking forward to talking to Mike Leake, because, you know, Mike now is becoming one of the few pitchers in baseball that really can get consistently into the sixth and seventh inning, because now what's happening in baseball is that you now start to build your starting staff. You start to build your other parts of the bullpen, you know, to make sure that you have enough relievers that if you need to, you know, take out your starter in the fifth inning, sixth inning, that they can get you 4 to 5 innings of relief almost each night. And so that's why a leak is such a, you know, a nice addition and a nice trade in being able to get him. And last night, I mean, here he was. He was just gave up one run in six innings, doing perfect. And then all of a sudden, everything starts to fall apart in the seventh. And with a team like the Astros, that's understandable. But I think what it does show is, okay, they, you know, just need to tighten up some things. You know, for example, you go back to Ariel Miranda's game the night before, and what Ariel was able to do is go 5 innings, and then, of course, you know, you have Danny Aldavila coming over, and he gives up a 2-run homer in the sixth. Okay, it's unfortunate, but that happens. But, you know, tightening things up in the fifth, sixth, and seventh innings now are keys for teams. And if you have a pitcher that can get you into the sixth or seventh, it's just such a bonus. And, Mara, I think that's what one thing that now you just have to kind of watch and say, okay, the lessons learned. And that's what I thought about this whole series against the Astros. You knew it was going to be tough. You knew how good they were, but it was going to be a good testing ground to see where this team is. And even though naturally they have not been able to hit much against, hardly at all, against the Astro pitchers, well, who does? I mean, this staff is so good. But I think it does show that, you know, this team this year, I think, is better able to compete against the Astros than last year's team.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, obviously, they almost had that game last night. Unfortunately, you know, Leake had that bad inning in the sixth, but he was off to such a good start, and he's been so consistent for them. I mean, he only had one loss since last season coming here before that. So it's, I think they're much better set up. I think we're also, you know, not talking a lot about the fact that they're still waiting to get Zunino and Gamble back in there. So, I mean, Gamble finally came back last night, but and Cruz is a little bit hobbled still, even though he's out there. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that he's going to come along a little better, but I think that the batting lineup can get even better as the season goes along.
And I think just a win today, just to even the series, would make it great. Because I thought going in, it was no way they're going to win 3 out of 4. I mean, it was great to be able to have Paxton do, you know, a great job and show getting the 7 innings and all that to start the series, and then, you know, getting everything off to that positive. But I think that overall, I mean, this team accounted for itself, I think, very well.
I think so, too. And I think that seeing a little bit of what we saw from spring training and Marco Gonzalez today would be huge.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, he's really the wild card in this mix, because, I mean, I think you can see, and even with last night's performance, I mean, they're solid with their top three. Yeah, Felix needs to, you know, definitely make sure that, you know, he stays more consistent. You know, get more consistent in the road games. I mean, Paxton's now really getting into a nice groove. That's encouraging. I mean, you can see that, you know, Leake has just been steady ever since coming over here in that trade. So that's real positive. And now it's just a matter, okay, what's the next step? You know, Marco Gonzalez, because if he can give you what you saw in spring training, you know, in the regular season and what he was able to do maybe in his first start, you know, now you have four, and then it's a matter, okay, Erasmo Ramirez now starting on Sunday can try to establish that fifth starter, and you know you have Miranda. So you really have, you know, six decent options, but what you want is that fourth one to step forward like Marco and really do well.
Yeah, and I think he can. I really do think there's something to what DePoto mentioned last week about the strange start that they got off to with the schedule, and I could see that being hard to establish some consistency.
And that's the thing. I mean, you want to have as much consistency on this team as possible. I mean, okay, and of course, we're looking forward to talking to Mike Leake, because, again, I mean, he's played such a key role. And it's funny because, I mean, you know, everybody talks about getting moves in the off season and getting the moves. And, you know, three of the the five starters now came over in trades last year and all have shown extremely good stuff. And joining us right now is Mike Leake. Do we have Mike? Okay, we just one more second here before we get Mike as he gets set up. And, of course, you know, Mariners' big game today as they conclude this four-game series against the very talented Houston Astros. And that's going to be fun to watch. And joining us right now is Mike Leake. And, Mike, I mean, isn't it amazing how pitching has changed over the last 3 or 4 years, where now all of a sudden it is seemingly, not for you, because you're one of the exceptions, so difficult now for guys to go into the sixth and seventh inning, but you've been consistently able to do this successfully.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately becoming a lost art, and hopefully it doesn't go away indefinitely, but for some reason, there is kind of a statistical world out there that's making it hard to get past six innings, seven innings. I mean, third time through the lineup is getting tougher with good hitters now.
Well, tell me what you can see, because I mean, I'm sure some of it is analytics, but is there some analytical thing that goes on in the dugout that, you know, now everybody makes the adjustments from the second time around to the third time around? I mean, what are you noticing? Because, again, you're one of the few guys that are out there trying to make that third time around the lineup battle.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, I would say a big thing that has to do with it would be arm strength and the fact that a lot of pitchers aren't really getting built up to go extended innings. I mean, you got a lot of pitch count limits. You got a lot of monitoring now. You didn't used to have that years back.
So like, for example, what have you done over the last couple of years, whether it's new or something that you consistently do to build up and then to be able to do what you've been able to do in the sixth and seventh?
Well, I grew up throwing a lot of long toss, grew up playing catch every day. So, I mean, the arm strength, I guess, was kind of natural for me growing up. My arm just took a liking to throwing a baseball and got stronger in that aspect. Today's day is more making little tiny adjustments mechanically and with the body, with regards to the reaction of your body after each start.
And is that something you do in the weight room? Is it something that you do running, or what type of things do you try to do to kind of get this recovery type of day?
For me, the last few years, I've really incorporated a lot of kind of making sure I'm getting oxygen to all my muscles, along getting my muscles longer, strengthening them, and getting rid of knots that shouldn't be there. Some massage work. A lot of soft tissue, foam rolling, a cross ball. So right now I'm kind of in more of a prehab phase with in regards to my body. But
is some of that in a hyperbaric chamber to try to get the oxygen in?
Yeah, some guys do that. I haven't tried it yet. I don't know. Growing up, I heard pure oxygen isn't the best for you, but so that's kind of why I have shied away from it.
As you got into baseball as a young kid, did you ever think that it would become almost this much scientific type stuff? Because, again, it's like, hey, just pick up the ball, throw the ball, pick up the bat, hit the ball, all those different things. Did you ever think it was going to be like this?
Not until I got here. My first year, I just realized how much goes into it. Video work, watching guys play every day in, day out, kind of basically learning each individual is kind of your job. So now that you're throwing numbers in there, it's kind of you're having to learn both the hitter all along with the numbers that go along with it. But if you can get good at one or the other, you may not need the other. So we'll see.
When you were coming out of high school and that, I mean, were you this much of a student of the game or just a player of the game? And when did you make that adjustment to become a student of the game?
I would say I was a player all the way up until a couple of years into the big leagues, until I realized that, yeah, I mean, it takes some homework beyond all the tools that you learned at a younger age, all the basic tools. Once you get the basic tools down, then you kind of have to start studying the swings, the mechanical parts of swings, the fatigue of swings. You kind of just have to learn so much more with the detail of the game.
Mike Leake, join us in the Venue Kings Hotline. What do you like so far about this move to Seattle from last year? Because, again, you've responded brilliantly in the consistency that you've had pitching.
I mean, it's on the West Coast, kind of a different type of atmosphere, which helps. I mean, I think Midwest atmosphere, it's definitely a little more into it. I wouldn't say that the West Coast isn't into their baseball. They're definitely more absorbed into the game. And also, I mean, just being able to kind of take a deep breath and have a new start.
And then finally, what is it about this ballpark as a pitcher and the way that you pitch that works for you?
I can get away with some deep fly balls here, balls that are kind of low in the zone, but some guys can find a barrel to get to. Also, I mean, having a pretty smooth infield, I can use the infield to. It's just a big field that I can use to my advantage as far as letting balls go on the ground or keeping them in the air long enough for the outfield to get to.
That's great. Hey, Mike Leake, congratulations on the transition. It's been fun watching you pitch since last year and looking forward to more starts coming down the line. Mike Leake, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Mike Leake joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline. Hey, the Heritage Distilling pitching matchup today is going to be Marco Gonzalez taking on Charlie Morton. Change it up with Heritage Distillage BSB. That's brown sugar bourbon. Coming up next, we go behind the lines for checking out what's going on in the National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And each day at 10:45, we go behind the lines. And obviously, today being the national holiday that it is, and I don't know, maybe the buzz isn't as big this year on the schedule as maybe past years. But nevertheless, the schedule comes out at 5 o'clock today. And, of course, that gives you the idea. It's like, okay, you look and see, you know, all the little things. You get the checks. Now, again, one of the things that everybody's going to be checking for is the early starts, the early East Coast starts, because that's obviously a problem for a lot of teams. I know that a proposal was made and not voted on, but and kind of pulled back of trying to have, and this is by San Francisco, to have no more, a limit to the number of starts that you would have on the East Coast, which would be 10 o'clock West Coast time. Because again, it's a drain. Like, for example, last year, technically the Seahawks didn't have any. You know, they were considered to be one of the better teams in the league, at least when they put the schedule out. You know, they got mostly the 4 o'clock starts on the East Coast if there was going to be one there. The only change in that was Jacksonville, but then all of a sudden Jacksonville becomes good last year with their defense, and so now that December game became a late start, so Seattle went through and didn't have any of that. And normally what happens on those West Coast starts that are on the East Coast that early, I mean, it's a slow start for the team because the body isn't ready. You're 3 hours behind. I mean, you're playing in the morning and not in the afternoon. That becomes a big issue. So that's going to be one of the things to kind of see, particularly now that the Seahawks didn't make the playoffs and may not be able to get that benefit. You know, conversely, you look at the Arizona Cardinals last year. They ended up, you know, having 5 early starts. And, you know, you notice they didn't make the playoffs. And so it becomes very difficult. Now, Pete Carroll has done a great job of, you know, changing things around when, you know, players aren't reading books in meetings, trying to make sure that, you know, they can accommodate and, you know, get the good performances and get good energy in the early part of the game. I mean, he's worked schedules so well in all of that to be able to do it. So that's going to be one of the things to look at. The other thing to be able to look at, okay, do you have the deadly three-game road trip? Now, what happens, because more analytics has gone into the schedule making, you know, they try to have different type of programs in there to try to minimize that. But again, you're still going to get a handful of teams that'll have to have a three-game stretch on the road, which is really, really difficult. I mean, you know, sometimes you pay a price for that. I mean, the Atlanta Falcons, for example, they went to the Super Bowl the previous year, and yet they had a three-game road trip. And, you know, it's really tough, you know, to win on the road, but then all of a sudden, if you have that mid-season where you're going to be almost a month with no home games, it wears you out, and particularly, you know, where you're going to play. Because, for example, you know, sometimes if you're going on that East to West Coast type of series, and you may have to have a couple games on the East Coast, you may have to keep the team on the East Coast to be able to handle all that. So that's another issue. That's another one to kind of check the boxes on. And then just to see, you know, if it's a balance between, you know, where the good home games are, where the easy home games are, where the tough road games are. You know, do you have a tough finish, a tough stretch? I mean, last year's schedule, Mara, I thought was very balanced. I mean, it was one of the more balanced schedules that they had. And so I didn't think that they had any disadvantage. But as you know, I break down schedules way too much trying to look at that. And I'll be doing that over the course of the next few weeks as I study and get ready to do that to see, okay, where are the tough parts going to be, you know, if you don't get off to a good start. So, I mean, schedule to me is everything. That's why for me, this is kind of a national holiday.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big deal. Last year, they didn't have any 10 a.m. starts, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, they have one.
Just one.
And that was scheduled to be the Jacksonville game. But because Jacksonville was so good
as a season,
they moved it. Yeah, they made the switch.
Yeah, I think that's a huge deal for them. I'm looking, John, right now at CBS's rankings for strength of opponent schedule next year. Mm-hmm. And the Seahawks are tied for fifth hardest.
Right.
They're facing teams with a combined win percentage from last year of 523. Well, how much stock do you put into that when you crunch your numbers?
I do. I mean, what you have to look at sometimes, it's the division that causes that. And what I think they have, whether they have the NFC South next year or this year, and if that's the case, then you have three playoff caliber teams that you have to play, and that makes it, so that's going to up the schedule. And naturally, you know, you take on the Rams now, they had, you know, 11-5, so that's going to be, you know, 22-10, you know. But what you have to kind of do is you whittle that and see, all right, where are the going to be cold weather games? That's why, you know, you talk about the balance of the schedule last year. The coldest weather games were the games in Seattle. I mean, they had the fortune of playing Green Bay again early in the season, you know, the Giants early enough where it was still warm. I mean, it's tougher when you start to have the cold weather games late in the season, and we'll see if that happens. Now, of course, you know, you play certain divisions, you may get more dome games and all those different things, so you may not have to worry about that. But no, I mean, sometimes the numbers can deceive you. And that's why I try to break them down to kind of see, okay, so where's the balance in this? Because, you know, you try to navigate through and it's harder to win on the road. So you have to kind of see where those road games are.
Yeah, I could be wrong on this. I'd have to take a look at the actual stats, but I feel like the Seahawks actually struggle worse with the extreme heat games.
Yeah, they do.
Like the Titans last mm-hmm. year and mm-hmm. the Chargers a couple years ago. So I think they're all right in the cold.
Yeah. I mean, but not too cold. I mean, you go back to that Green Bay game a couple of years ago, you know, that was a struggle. They had the New England game, which wasn't, I don't think, too cold that they were able to win that one. But no, it's like you still have to watch that because, again, anything that's going to be extreme, you know, where there's going to be extreme heat or extreme cold, you know, that makes it that much tougher. I mean, you know, you look and that's why I look at the schedule to take a look at what do the Florida teams have? You know, because if they get a lot of September home games, then they have a significant advantage because they can really wear down some of the teams coming in there, particularly non-division teams. You know, that's because, again, you know, they have, you know, if it's, you know, 90 degrees with 89% humidity, then that's a tough 3-hour day for that visiting team. And that gives them an advantage. And there's always going to be an advantage. I mean, a Green Bay in December, when you have Aaron Rodgers, you always have an advantage.
John, what about the home field advantage for the Seahawks? We saw that slip a little mm-hmm. bit last year. Do you think that that's something they can get back this year?
They can try to, yeah. I mean, again, I think it's now this, you know, will it be back like it was 2 years ago? Probably not. I think because, again, the team's not as talented, but what they have to do is reestablish that. And then maybe that where that reset is that, you know, there can be now new energy. We'll see how the crowd reacts to it. But, the one thing that happened last year, which was not good, is the fear factor left. Because there's always that fear factor. It's like, okay, no matter what team it's going to be, one of the better teams coming into Seattle, coming into CenturyLink, something bad's going to happen. and you just kind of wait that out to see what it's going to be, because again, you know that advantage is there for this team in being able to have the big play in the fourth quarter, whether it's a key interception, a key fumble, a key mistake, and that's where the crowd plays into it, because then if the crowd's all jacked up and the young quarterback comes in and he starts getting intimidated by the crowd. But last year, that fear factor was not there. I mean, Kirk Cousins in Washington came in. There was not the fear factor. The Rams came in late in the season. There was no fear factor. And so what they need to do is start building it back. And to think that they can build it back like it was before in 1 year, I think that's going to be too much. But I do think that they can build some things back. So, hey, by the way, looks like we'll find out, of course, about the roof. I would imagine, with nice as it's going to be, looks like the roof is going to be open. And, of course, that's the Acton's report. That's today's report on the roof. It's brought to you by Acton's Quality Roofing. All right, coming up next, we're going to get into Earl Thomas, all these different things going on with the Seahawks, the schedule. Brady Henderson from ESPN.com joining us next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.